Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, your host, and you are listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And you're listening also to bbsradio.com. But first of all, I always greet you with Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, meaning peace to you all in Sanskrit. And then I like to demystify Tantra a little bit in the beginning of each show as my appetizer before we bring on the main course. So this evening, my guest tonight is going to be talking about what is sacred prostitution? What is a sacred prostitute? What does that mean? And we're going to connect that to Tantra. We're going to connect the roots of that to Tantra. And we're going to talk about a lot of things. It's going to be very surprising to me as much as you. And I really can't wait almost to start interviewing her. But I want to set the stage a little bit. So in terms of Tantra, a few weeks ago, if you were listening to my show with Paula Gloria, Paula told us some really interesting facts about the days of old, how there were sex rituals that had to do with the harvest, and that the job of the priests or the shamans, and we're talking thousands of years ago, we're talking about agrarian cultures, the job of the priests and the shamans was to spread prayer for the harvest, that everything in the whole culture revolved around the harvest, and that there was tremendous amount of sex rituals and special priestesses who were really the priests. They were the temple priestesses who had everything to do with the harvest. And the first coins that there were in culture had to do with making a contribution towards these priestesses who had sex rituals to honor and usher and bring in both the planting of crops and then the harvesting of crops. And down through history, the people who were responsible for this were called sacred prostitutes. And I don't know exactly which cultures. I'm sure Paula Gloria, my guest on that show, knows exactly which cultures. I don't know exactly, but I trust her as a tremendous authority on history and certainly on rituals and symbols. And so I'm just bringing that back. I'm mentioning it because tonight my guest is Veronica Monet, and we're going to have a conversation about what is Tantra, where it connects with people who are dakinis, people who are sacred prostitutes, people who are actually teaching others to be free in their bodies, free in their sexuality, teaching them, healing them. And, there are many people who are pretending to be doing this, and they're using Tantra in the name of things that they do, and actually they're not. They're just, I don't know what they're doing, but they're not doing Tantra. And Veronica knows about Tantra, and she is very astute about these areas. So we're going to find out from her some amazing things. Now, let me tell you a little bit about her and some of the things, some of the topics that she discusses. Veronica Monet graduated as an honor student from Oregon State University with a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology and a minor in Business Administration. And after she worked in corporate settings for 7 years, she has spent the next 14 years acquiring experience with practical and political aspects of sex work. She's been an erotic model. She's been a porn actress. She's been a prostitute, an escort, and a courtesan. And I imagine that those have lots of different distinctions inside of them, and we're going to hear a little bit about that this evening. She has a tremendous interest in Tantra, and she writes things that are very controversial. She has a lot to say about being somebody who's been with other people's husbands. She's written pieces on Dear Mommies, things they need to know about sex. She has an amazing website, veronicamonet.com, and we're going to talk a little bit tonight about what she has on that website as well, so you can find out more from her. She has a lot to educate the general public about. So without further ado, Veronica, are you there? I want to introduce you. Are you there?
I am. Yes, it was very interesting. I was actually on Google looking up Paula Gloria because I'd never heard of her before.
Oh, really? Paula Gloria? Yeah, you go on paulagloria.com.
Yeah. Well,
and her television show is Farther Down the Rabbit Hole, and she broadcasts every day live from New York, Gramercy Park, or Union Square, and she's very, very controversial. Very.
That is, her website was really hard to, couldn't tell what she was selling.
Yeah. Well, it's on
the picture, though.
And stuff, but yeah.
Did she used to work with Howard Stern or something?
She has been doing work with Howard Stern, and what she and you and I have in common is Alan Steinfeld, who is also a host on BBS Radio.
Oh.
And he introduced me to BBS Radio, and he introduced you to BBS Radio.
He certainly did, and I met Alan at the One Taste Officer Commune, whatever you want to call it, in San Francisco about a year ago.
Yeah, Alan is who I call the spiritual vortex of New York. He just he connects everyone. So now he's connecting us.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
I love it. So, it's a small world after all.
It is. It certainly
hey,
is.
Hey, what's this?
So tell us a little bit about you. We're going to connect everything back to Tantra in some way or other, but you have an amazing background, one that is rare. It's not something that, you know, every person is doing. It's not something that everybody has explored, and lots of people would like to explore it and are scared. Lots of people are exploring it, and they're doing funky stuff, you know. Some people are doing great stuff, so I don't know. You know, I don't know where to begin except to say, let's just get started. What happened that made you leave corporate America? Let's talk, because I left corporate America too, and I'm in sex work as well.
Almost all women do at some point in their career, it seems to me, because we get so frustrated with the glass ceiling and just, you know, rotten attitudes of the work area. So I think a lot of women gravitate towards becoming entrepreneurs at some point in their life. In my case, there was a combination of sexual harassment as well as just sexism. So this is back in the late 80s. It's 1988. I'm getting passed up for promotions. But getting to, you know, like train my own supervisor, that's always fun.
Yeah.
It's like, well, let's see, I have all this information, but I have to train him so he can boss me and tell me the things I just told him. And make more money and sit in a leather chair in an office, and I'll just stay over here in this cubicle while I take all his phone calls and do all his paperwork. That's great. Yeah, I just got really tired of that. Got tired of it. Things were more probably, you know, obscene as far as the sexism and sexual harassment back in the 80s than they are now, just because, you know, now we've had a lot of lawsuits that have forced people to have to clean up their act. But at the time, I remember one case in particular. I was working for this one company. There were five of us in a secretarial pool. Most of the women, I was just fresh out of college, so I didn't have any responsibilities or dependents. But all the other women were like young, unwed mothers who I'd see them struggle with, should I put gas in the car, buy myself lunch, or pay the babysitter? Those kind of, you know, really just barely surviving kind of decisions, and I'd watch them struggle like that every day. And then they brought in this young man who was a college graduate like myself, so he was probably about my age. Brought him in, gave him less work to do, put him in the same department with us. Of course, we all had to train him. That's always fun, too. Put one extra word in his title and paid him more. And then he'd come back from his lunch break and show us all the wonderful things he'd brought at Nordstrom's.
I see.
So anyway, this really I got fed up with it, and then I met this woman who was driving a Mercedes, living in a mansion, had three kids and a husband, and just happened to be working as a prostitute. And I was like, how come nobody ever told me this? Every time I turn on the TV or the news or open up a feminist book or, you know, I thought, sure, all prostitutes were drug addicts wearing fishnets and miniskirts and chewing gum, and they all had pimps. I didn't know there were these middle-class married women who had kids. I was like, so I found that quite fascinating, and I didn't just, like, jump in with both feet, but, you know, it didn't take long for me to go, hey, nobody ever told me this was an option. I thought this was how you degrade yourself and sell yourself out to the patriarchy, and pretty soon it looked to me like this woman had a lot of power, a lot of money, a lot of independence, and I had done everything right. I'd gone to college, graduated with honors, you know, stayed in the work environment for 7 years, gotten all kinds of awards and recognition. They just wouldn't give me any money. So
yeah.
I get the rose on the secretary's day. I had plaques all over the wall for all the good they were doing me, and I was on the verge of bankruptcy. So most of it was disillusionment, anger, and desperate financial need that drove me into prostitution. And I was rebellious, you know, and angry at this point. So I didn't have a great relationship with my clients. Never, ever once crossed my mind that sex could be a healing thing. I didn't even have a healing relationship with the people I dated. But all of that was about to change because my girlfriend ended up getting arrested. And that meant that she and I had to stop associating with each other because the cops were trying to get me to testify against her.
Right.
So she moved one way and I moved the other way, and we had to stop working together. And in the process, I moved to San Francisco, and I met all these really interesting sex workers. For one thing, the first group of sex workers I met were political activists. And I was like, why? It's just a job. Why would you be a political activist? But a lot of these sex workers weren't even making that much money. They were just doing it so that they had more time to protest and do other political activities and write. And some of them were artists. And so I discovered this whole another population of people in San Francisco that were basically funding their politics and their art with prostitution. And then they were also politically... They were starting to have some political consciousness around the sex worker rights movement, period. But I can't say that that was a really well-defined thing at this point. And then I moved...
Well, around what time? When was that? Around the mid-80s?
Oh, this would have been 1990.
Okay.
1990. Mm-hmm. And just shortly after that, I had moved to a bad part of town. This is where I met all the political activist people.
Mm-hmm.
And I started making money, you know, so I didn't have to live in the bad part of town. So I was in the bad part of town for about 9 months, and I got enough money that I moved to the really, really nice part of town. And some of my straight friends who had no idea what I did for a living said, wow, nobody ever moves from the Tenderloin to the Marina in 9 months. How'd you do it? I just smile and go, I don't know, just lucky, I guess.
That's amazing.
So I moved to the Marina. And I had gone to this conference, this writer's conference, and somebody heard me talk about being a prostitute, and she said, well, I want you to meet some other women. And she gave me this woman's contact information. I called her up, found out that she was having meetings, and they called themselves the Marina Girls because they were having meetings in the Marina.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, here's yet another group of sex workers. I want to go find out what these people are about. And it turned out she lived in the same building I lived in.
Mm.
And her name was Samantha Miller. And she was somebody who had the education of a therapist. So she had a master's degree. She was very, very feminist in consciousness. Knew all kinds of people like Annie Sprinkle, Betty Dodson. I mean, she was really tied into the scene in New York. And this just really opened up my whole eyes. I mean, it was like, wow, this is amazing. But the meetings they were less political than the ones I'd been going to on the bad part of town. They were kind of like touchy-feely support groups. What else would you expect from a therapist, right? And I was really getting a lot out of this because finally I had a group of women I could talk to. And they were such fascinating women. Most of them were college educated or had a background in really interesting jobs. Like one woman was an accountant. The other one had been a journalist. They had interesting hobbies. One was way into skydiving. And so I thought, another woman, she had been a missionary's wife in Africa.
And all these women were working as some form of prostitution.
Yes.
At this time.
Yes.
It's amazing.
They were
so this
all
is a well-kept
as
secret.
Escorts. Huh?
This is a well-kept secret.
Oh, it is. And the other thing that's a well-kept secret about this is that almost every single one of us was in our 30s. And in fact, there were a couple women in the group who were actually already in their 40s at the time. So we're talking about women in their 30s and 40s who are college educated and have very, very interesting career, you know, histories, who have gone into the sex industry. It blew my mind. It totally blew my mind. I just, and you would never be able to spot these people either. I mean, I like high heels and lipstick, but a lot of these women wouldn't even wear high heels and lipstick. The accountant looked like a librarian. So I was really shocked, really intrigued. And as we started having these meetings, I think, I don't know who introduced the idea, but probably Terry Goodson. She was a former Army, I don't know, sergeant, captain. I really don't know what her rank was in the Army, but she used to be in the Army. She loved to organize, and so she might have suggested that we get more political. Sam might have, because of some of her ties. And I'm pretty sure I had some voice in that as well, because I'd already connected with these people in the Tenderloin who were very political. But as it turned out, because Carol Queen introduced me to Samantha Miller, I introduced Samantha Miller to this guy named Vic St. Blaise, who was running the political group of sex workers on the bad part of town. And when I say running, I'm using that word loosely. It wasn't like it was a dictatorship or anything, but he was like the organizer.
But when you say political, yeah, because I want to ask you some questions about when you say political.
Okay.
And, you know, like political meaning organizing so that people, it could become legal?
No. See, that's the thing. It would be more like we're tired of the government having, you know, laws about everything. It was a little more disorganized. It was kind of an anarchist approach. And a lot of 20-year-old rebellious people in this, you know, who were rebellious in their mannerism, their dress, their language, their lifestyle, everything. So it was more like my life is a political statement, and that's why I'm in prostitution, because I am, you know, flipping off the establishment.
I completely understand.
Okay,
one second. On that moment, we do need to take a break.
Oh, okay.
So let's stop for a minute that your life is a political statement, and you're flipping off the establishment through your whole life.
Right.
So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. This is Laurie Hamlisch, your host. I'm here with Veronica Monet, and we are discussing sacred prostitution. We're about to come back and talk about, delve more into it, the politics of it, and more. And please stay tuned.
Are you feeling like you just don't get it? All this talk about sex and love, love and sex? Feeling like all people ever think about and talk about is sex? Maybe you are longing for a more spiritual sexual connection. Hey, maybe you are just totally confused about all of it. Lori Handler's new book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy, puts the innocence and love back into sex. And it gives Tantra the respect it truly deserves. In this book, you will discover a wonderful meditation on self-love. You will also find fun new ways to develop an intimacy with yourself, whether or not you have a partner. And now, for only $19.99, you can get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. Right now, go to www.sexandhappiness.com. and order your copy. Give yourself the gift.
That's sexandhappiness.com.
Are you someone who's looking for more pleasure in your life and you've never heard of East Garden? East Garden is a comfortable and elegant environment for women to explore the tools of pleasure and other educational materials. These materials enhance mind, body, and spirit. Eve's Garden encourages women to take responsibility for their own sexuality and clearly understand that bodily pleasure and spiritual joy are one and the same. While in New York City, you can visit the store at 119 West 57th Street, Suite 1201. And now, for a limited time, you can get a 15% discount on everything in stock if you go through evesgarden.com/tantracafe. Go there now.
Welcome back. This is Laurie Handlers at Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. And tonight I have this amazing guest, Veronica Monet, and she's talking to us about how she, as an educated, college-educated woman, decided that her political statement in life would be becoming a sex worker and exploring every aspect of it, so she would be kind of throwing herself in the face of whatever people considered to be, you know, proper and appropriate, and she found how she could make more money, become more happy, be more entrepreneurial, be more successful as a prostitute, an escort, a courtesan. So we're back, Veronica. You were just talking about flipping off.
Well, I was trying to distinguish between these two groups. I was going to both of them. So one's mostly young kids who spent, I mean, they're party kids, and they're very angry and they're rebellious, mm-hmm. and they love to protest everything. And then the other group is these women in their 30s and 40s who are college educated and dress really conservatively. So what's interesting about the next phase of this story is that we married these two groups. I introduced Samantha Miller to Vic St. Blaise, and these two people just took to each other like crazy. And not in a sexual way. She's straight, he's gay. Or maybe she's bi, I'm not sure. I never tested that, but he's definitely gay. So the chemistry between them was, you know, cerebral, intellectual, passionate. And we, as a group, ended up rebirthing COYOTE, which is the political organization, it stands for Call Off Your Old Tired Ethics. It was founded in 1973 by Margot St. James, and it had kind of fallen into disuse by 1991. So in 1991, basically, COYOTE was reborn, and I was one of the original steering committee members of that, and we had, mm-hmm. now we were starting to become political. Now we were starting to have an agenda. Now we were starting to dream and think about what, you know, what would we want to do? And we brought in a lot of people. Most of us became members of the National Organization for Women. We'd actually brought in people from the National Organization of Women to work with us to try to, you know, draft statement of purpose for now. I mean, it was very involved. Betty mm-hmm. Dodson came out and met with us. It was really quite awesome. And one of the big things that happened was we suddenly got a phone number and a mailing address, and the media started contacting us almost immediately. And at this point, I did one TV show, and I became the COYOTE spokesperson because the camera really liked me. The producers really liked me, and one producer shared my name and contact information with another producer, and pretty soon that's what I was doing. I did tons and tons of television, everything from CNN to the Playboy Channel, and for years, starting in 1991 when I did the Montel Williams show, and it's 19 years later, and I just did four different television programs this year, and I'm being interviewed for a documentary in about a month.
Fantastic.
You're only supposed to get 15 minutes. I've had more than 15 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is like, you know, baseball been Betty good to me, but in a different way.
Yes. It's kind of hard, you know, to get me to say something negative about prostitution, obviously.
You're saying, but if I really understand you correctly, I mean, and I'm not somebody who just fell off a tree, but I, you know, I have a very big consciousness about sex, sexuality, sex work, and I'm just going to play it really straight here for my listeners who might be anybody. You're saying that women who have been historically sexually harassed by the establishment, by men who run companies, et cetera, rather than being sexually harassed and taking it for no pay and heartache and grief and whatever they have to do when they go into sex work, and of course not all of them, but you in particular and others that you know, instead of being harassed, you become like the goddess. You become this someone, a courtesan, someone like was in the movie Dangerous Beauties, and which we acknowledge was an excellent movie. These courtesans were the women that men desired to be with, to tell their whole story to eat with, to wine, to dine, and to have sexual contact with, who, when they couldn't have that with their wives, because of course marriage is a political structure. So you're calling into question the whole phony kind of structure there is in society, when in fact if men really just want to be with women for sexuality, then women ought to capitalize on it, and women should be making beaucoup bucks from what it is that, how it is they want to portray it, how it is they want to dish it up, rather than being at the effect of somebody who doesn't want to pay them that much money for doing a job.
I was married too, and I have nothing against marriage. I've got nothing against monogamy, nothing against polyamory, nothing against abstinence for that matter. I'm very, very much a proponent of choice. I want people to have more choices, not fewer choices. And I'm really tired of this adolescent mentality that we have in our culture, which doesn't just apply to sex. It applies to everything. Where it seems like we want to get together and have a consensus about the one right way to do it, then pass a law and put everybody who does it the wrong way in jail. And it's just insane. There is not one right way for even one person. In the course of my life, my sexuality, my profession, my career, my relationships, they have all gone through all kinds of permutations and will continue to do so if I'm a growth-oriented individual, which I am.
If you're alive.
Yeah, people are sucking air but don't seem to be fully alive.
Right.
But, I've been abstinent, I've been promiscuous, I've gotten paid for sex, I've, been monogamous, and they're all beautiful as long as I'm the one that gets to decide.
Yes. I guess I was drawing a broader brush, which was just to say that you're being harassed on the one side, and then you're not harassing, you're actually using it as a career, as a way to make money.
Now, see, that really segues into the next part of the story, because basically this starts off as a big, F you to the establishment and to all the sexist pigs out there. And it becomes a way to try to, rescue myself from bankruptcy. It morphs into a political calling. And I, become very passionate about the whole whore-Madonna complex and the fact that women who aren't even prostitutes are punished for anything that looks like they might become sexually permissive.
Right.
And, that still happens, especially in some very conservative countries. We still have honor killings that take place right here in the United States of America, which is about killing women for being sexually, out of the box, doing whatever they want. And women still can lose custody of their children for things like being promiscuous or lesbian. So, we're really, really harsh and cruel towards women when it comes to their sexuality, and that became a really big cause for me. But one of the women that was in our group, that journalist from the United Kingdom, her name was Cozy Fabian, and she taught a class on sacred prostitution. Now, here again, I'm getting my mind completely expanded. It went from being rebellion and disillusionment to political activism to finally a spiritual calling.
Yes.
And when I started studying sacred prostitution is when I finally felt like I had found my authentic connection to sexuality, which was to use it to heal, to create health and wellness and healing. And when I shifted my paradigm in that direction, I went from having just, clients that I was basically taking their money, to clients who I cared deeply for, who cared deeply for me, and that whole thing got shifted to being worshipped, and also feeling like I had a sacred job, that what I was doing wasn't just about making money, but it was also about working with people's energy and their hearts and their souls. A lot of my focus, I never called myself a Dakini. I never tried to say I am a tantric master. I studied tantra, and I certainly worked with chakras, and I worked with people's energy, and I could feel it crawling up my arms if they weren't breathing it out. So I became very, very interested in conscious breathing just so I wouldn't be absorbing all this negative energy. But my main focus was really about giving people what I like to call confession and absolution. You could come to see me and tell me just about anything and be loved and accepted. And that is a huge gift that most people can't even find from their own priest or pastor or preacher.
Yes. Yeah, so that would be exactly what sacred prostitution is.
It is.
And in a crazy way, even though it isn't, it is. It really is. That's very tantric. Because tantra is about expanding awareness to include everything. So if one includes everything, then one has, you know, reference and acceptance and love for everything there is on the planet. I always tell people that if I've been able to find my own terrorist inside myself, you know, I've wreaked terror on my relationships, plenty of them.
Right.
So how can I only point out there?
Right.
You know, I can point right in here. So if I can accept that in myself, I can accept everything in the world. You know, and that's exactly what you're saying. Like, there's this kind of acceptance, there's a sacredness, there's a holiness there to what you're describing.
There is, and I really learned to see people in a totally different, you know, my whole attitude about people I had sex with, part of the culture, it's very much about if you're promiscuous, you collect lovers, but they have to be people who somehow or another give you more social credibility. So you use lovers to kind of climb the social ladder or to make yourself feel good about yourself or to bolster your ego. And as a sacred prostitute, you know, you're dealing with people that you might not actually choose to associate with unless they were paying you. And you learn to see yourself and the client in an archetypal fashion. So mm-hmm. that they become sacred, you become sacred, and the space that you create, it has nothing to do with ego. So, I mean, some incredibly beautiful things can happen, and I call it transpersonal love, because personal love a lot of times can be very possessive and judgmental and attached. Transpersonal love is very much like what we would hope, you know, a priest or a pastor or a rabbi would do for us, which is to, you know, care about us but, you know, not come home with us. So,
but then again, we know that they have, and we know that they do. But that's a whole other topic.
Well, I, whenever my clients forgot that we were going to have professional boundaries, I would remind them, like, we've created a very sacred space here where wonderful things can happen that you can't have with a wife or a girlfriend by virtue of the fact that it is not a personal relationship, it's a professional relationship. That's why we have professional relationships. That's why I go see a therapist. I can get all kinds of personal advice from my mom for free or my friends. But when I go to see a therapist, that person is able to not just be objective, they're able to create a space for me where I can interact on in a capacity and a level that I can't in my personal relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that to me resembles, I don't want to use the word resemble, that what you're describing is really what the basis was for that film, you know, Dangerous Beauties. I mean, that was like courtesanship in Venice in the 1500s or the whatever, 1200s, where...
16th century.
Renaissance
Venice. And the thing about courtesans, and we're going to take this a little bit further, because remember you said you were sure that prostitute, escort, and courtesan must have different definitions.
They do. They must have different distinctions.
They do. So prostitute, basically, that's kind of a legal definition, and everybody falls under that. The law can put anybody in jail for prostitution.
Having a sexual encounter for money. Is that correct?
No. Nope.
Okay.
To touch the buttocks for purposes of sexual arousal.
Got it.
If you go to a strip club, the girl sits on the guy's lap. There's a buttocks getting touched for the purpose of sexual arousal. If you go to a massage therapist, a lot of times the massage therapist is going to massage your butt. Now, if you get an erection while you're getting a straight shiatsu massage, who's to say if they touched your butt for purposes of sexual arousal? Again, what I'm trying to say about the law, and I've debated this a lot, I mean, we've had Measure Q just a couple years ago, now we got Measure K coming up. The law reads in such a way that it is possible to put anybody in jail for prostitution if they want to.
Got it.
And when I say anybody, I mean anybody who's touching another person for money.
Right.
For money.
Right.
So the reason that massage therapists don't go to jail and prostitutes do go to jail has everything to do with the part of town it happens in and the type of clothing that they're wearing. So if you have a massage, parlor in the bad part of town and the undercover cop comes in and you're wearing lipstick and high heels, you're going to go to jail. If you have a massage parlor in the bad part of town but you're wearing, you know, something that looks like a lab coat, you're probably not going to go to jail.
I see.
So, I mean, unfortunately, that's one part of the things we try to do when we're trying to educate the public to why we want to decriminalize prostitution is that it is based, especially here in California, where you can evict somebody on suspicion of prostitution. They don't have to get arrested or go to court.
Right, you can just do on suspicion.
A known prostitute, that's just anybody who's gossiped about. So it's a very dangerous law. It's a very, very dangerous law.
Right. I can hear that.
Yeah.
Now,
what's the difference between
an escort?
Huh? An escort, if you look up the word escort in the dictionary, it means go someplace with somebody. Most people don't use it that way. They use it as a euphemism for in-calls and out-calls. And what they mean is that either you'll come to my office or I'll come to your home or your hotel room. Mm-hmm. And they don't go anywhere with the client. They spend an hour with them. But it's still the common usage of the term. I personally prefer to use the term escort as it's intended, which just means that I went places with my clients. I went to dinner. I went to the ballet. I went to the Broadway plays. That, to me, is escorting.
Mm-hmm.
Courtesan is where you start getting paid for your brain, not just your body.
Yeah.
One of the things about Dangerous Beauty was these women went to college. They wrote. They read books. All the other women were not allowed to do that. To some extent, courtesans still have access to things other women are not allowed to have access to. And one of those things would be to argue with men.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you a for instance. One of my clients, when I was working as a courtesan, one of my clients was sitting across the table from me. We were in a 5-star restaurant somewhere in the world. I don't know because we travel all over the place. I have no idea what city we were in. I don't even know what restaurant we were in, but I'll never forget the moment that he looked at me and he says, you know, you're too expensive and you're too hard to get along with. I was thinking about never seeing you again, and then a tear welled up in his eye, and it dropped down the side of his face to his chin, and he said, and then I realized I need at least one person in this world who would disagree with me.
Wow.
And I knew at that moment I really had achieved true courtesanship. I had become a courtesan, because if you study the courtesans of old, and there's a good book called The Book of Courtesans by Susan Griffith, it points out just how rebellious and in-your-face most of these women were. They're very opinionated, powerful women that no man wants to marry.
Mm-hmm.
So, fortunately for me, a man did want to marry me, and he did. But by and large, we're talking about a personality that is on the same level as that of a man.
Right.
And it's very, very sexy. It's very, very hot. And it's also very valuable to a powerful man who's surrounded by people who are kissing his butt because he's got a lot of money and a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hugely powerful role, and it's a very, very important role. And on the other side of that, of course, the courtesan is not only really good at debating and having opinions of her own But she's also really, really good at making a man feel like he is the only man in the world. So
now,
it's a coin that has two sides to it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, we're going to have to go to break again, so we'll be right back, and we'll get into some other aspects. If you've just tuned in tonight, this is Lori Handlers. You're listening to Tantra Cafe. My guest tonight is Veronica Monet. She's amazing in her distinctions of her life, what she's lived, and the politics of it, the spirituality of it, and sacredness, and the brilliance of distinguishing between prostitution, escorting, courtesanship, and adding Tantra into all that, so the sacredness of it all. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're just going to stop for a moment for our sponsors. I, Lori Handlers, personally invite you to come with me on a tantric tour of the heart of India, November 19th to December 1st, 2008. You'll see the Taj Mahal and visit the fabulous Fatehpur Sikri, home of the great Mughal king Akbar. You'll experience Jaipur, the pink city, and visit the sacred lake of Pushkar. Then, at dawn from a boat on the Ganges in Varanasi, you'll see exquisite Hindu prayer rituals. You'll tour Sarnath, where the Buddha gave his first speech after attaining enlightenment, and then you'll explore the exotic Kama Sutra temples of Khajuraho. Finally, you'll shop till you drop in the Paraganj Bazaar in New Delhi. Throughout the tour, you'll learn tantric techniques and principles, and I promise you'll feel a tremendous sense of well-being as we delve into these simple yet potent tantric tools. Please note that no previous experience with Tantra or yoga is necessary. I invite you to join me in this unique experience touring the incredible country of India. And I must warn you, this is not your typical tour, and you are not a typical tourist.
For more information about this exciting tantric tour of the heart of India, contact Lori at butterflyworkshops.com or write to her at info@butterflyworkshops.com.
You're back with Tantra Cafe. I'm Lori Handlers, your host, and this evening I'm here with my guest, Veronica Monet. Before she comes back on, I just want to let you know the music you've been listening to. It's called Sacred Union, and it's by Jonathan Goldman on the Chakra Chants CD. And I picked Sacred Union this evening because we're talking about sacred union in a whole other way. Most of the guests that have come on before have talked about their breathing exercises and eye gazing. And tonight we're talking to Veronica, who has, you know, had sex for money, has had all kinds of just growing and different positions with it. I don't mean positions like Kama Sutra positions. I mean going from being rebellious to being political to being sacred in her own growth and development. So I played Sacred Union because I had a feeling that that was going to be the piece of music that more honored her than anything on my show tonight. So, Veronica, we're back.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And we're going to talk a little bit about Tantra now, some of the things I just mentioned. So
absolutely.
One of my hot buttons is that these days people are using the word Tantra, and there's all kinds of websites and all kinds of kind of sex sites out there, and people throw the word Tantra in, and then they don't really do Tantra. They don't even know Tantra. They're just practicing, they do like a bath ritual. They'll put their client into a bath, and they'll bathe them, and then they'll put them on the massage table, and, you know, maybe they'll rub them down, and then they do what's called happy ending massage, which you may know what that is, and I know what that is, but the listeners may not know. So
I think almost everybody knows. I mean, they use that phrase in movies nowadays.
They do. Okay,
they
well, happy.
Do.
Yeah, happy ending massage is a hand job. I mean, it's just that's what people do, and then they call it Tantra. And
I had the same pet peeve, because when I was out working for the rights of sex workers to live and have homes and be married, I was dating a tantric teacher.
Okay.
And she was very, very, I would say, you know, kind of elitist about her tantra. But when I asked her how much she charged, how many clients she saw, and what it was she actually did, it was just a hand job. That's what it was. A hand job with a lot of noisy breathing.
Okay.
And no offense. I mean, she was fun in the sack.
But here's the thing. I just thought
the attitude was ridiculous.
Well, in Tantra, I mean, there are tantrics. By the way, I mean, I teach this in my first level class. There are tantrics who believe that if a man ejaculates, he's losing his vital life force. So there are tantrics who believe that men should never ejaculate. Now, I don't agree with that. I think men should ejaculate at least once a month, twice a month, but not as much as men do. You know, men, I teach people to not go for a release, but rather to go for expansion and receiving and receiving and receiving and receiving as much as possible. So I don't work with clients one-on-one. I work with groups of people. I find one-on-one, for me, it doesn't do it. Like, I like working with 25 people at a time, you know, 30 people at a time, and I teach them things. They go home and do it for homework with themselves. They actually learn the techniques, the breathing and the squeezing and the self-pleasuring, until they can expand to the point, especially men, can expand to the point where they don't feel the need or the addiction to come. So then when I hear that all these people are doing happy ending and they're making a lot of noise, I get mad, because that's not it. It's about not that.
Right.
So then that's my distinction there. So what do you got to say about that?
Well, you and a current lover, we get along great. No, I do a lot of that. I do a lot of that with several lovers, actually.
Yeah.
I haven't had sexual intercourse now for almost, I think it's a year.
Really?
See, though,
in Tantra, you can have sexual intercourse, and the man would simply not ejaculate. And
I must
more...
be with, no, because I must be with some people who haven't mastered that yet. I think that's just where I'm at right now. I've had a lot of sexual intercourse,
right.
And I'm exploring all the ways that you can have orgasms and spiritual experiences without intercourse. I had intercourse last year. And it was coming off of 9 months of abstinence.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, conscious breathing. We breathed each other's air. We circulated each other's air.
Yeah, beautiful.
We did eye gazing. We did, you know, the lingam and the yoni of penis and vagina. It took us 3 days to have complete penetration.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up experiencing a kriya. I had a kriya that lasted an entire month. Now, I've heard
some... We need to tell the audience what kriya is. Yeah. So what Veronica's talking about is when you cultivate sexual energy and you don't release necessarily, or you release but you learn to release in big, big, ongoing kind of cosmic experiences rather than a fast release, which comes from a quickie, so to speak. I'm not putting quickies down, by the way. I'm just distinguishing here. Then your body goes into something called a kriya, which is, it looks like it's, it almost looks like a, some kind of, thing is taking you over. Your body just starts vibrating and vibrating and vibrating, and sometimes it just looks convulsive. And depending upon the extremity of it, it's like a contraction after contraction after contraction.
And I was breathing. I was having vaginal contractions that were so they were so powerful that I would a lot of times I would just have to sit down or lay down.
Yeah.
Stop whatever I was doing and just sit down and lay down. It was so delicious. It was so wonderful. It had, you know, it wasn't like I was having convulsions 24/7, but I would have them throughout the day, every single day, for an entire month. And it was so beautiful, I did not want to touch that energy with masturbation or orgasm.
Right.
So, I didn't. For an entire month, I didn't touch myself, and I didn't masturbate, and I didn't have an orgasm, and it just went on and on and on, and it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it has to it for me. I mean, it was just this amazing, you just feel so connected to everything and so connected to whatever concept of God you might have.
Well, I always tell people that tantrics are learning to do with their bodies what people for years have taken drugs to find out. You're like this expanded awareness, this expanded consciousness, this expanded sensuality and feeling. Everything is heightened and intense and beautiful and, in union at one with it all.
And
so that's exactly what you're talking about.
It is. And that's why to me the whole thing of, you know, whether I'm being monogamous or polyamorous or promiscuous or abstaining, I feel like my body and my spirit has its own natural rhythm, and that everything, rather than thinking, oh well, you know, finally I graduated from that and now I'm this ascended student in this other, you know, I hate hierarchies. I absolutely hate hierarchies, and it's one of the things that's put me off a little bit about the tantric community at times, is just this attitude of, you know, which for me isn't much different than if I was to go to one of my relatives' churches, because they all think they're at the right church and everybody else is going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, get over yourself. If you're doing something beautiful, don't ruin it by starting to think about how special you are.
Exactly. Well, that's the ego, and that's tantrics are trying to lose their ego, and sometimes they're gaining more ego. So that's that's really what you're speaking of. Now, listen, we're going to have to end in a moment. I want you to know that I feel like you've drawn a full circle on this show with me, kind of like, you know, coming from corporate all the way around all aspects of sex worker to tantric kriyas for months. I mean, that's just like amazing. See, that you could experience that yourself is really, just an amazing place to be in. That's really, and if you can start to bring that to your clients, or if you do bring that to your clients, if your clients would call in and say, you know, I had that for 30 days too after I saw Veronica West.
Well, my clients now are mostly on the telephone. And then I also teach workshops. So I don't work as an escort anymore. I stopped in 2004.
I see.
And mostly the reason for that is because I just got tired of, well, I got arrested and I got audited. And, you know, if you've got a big mouth and you're on Fox News debating congressmen, you're going to go to jail. So
I see.
So I decided to go straight because I thought, you know, that was interesting. I've done that. I've paid my dues, and now I'm ready to be, you know, make a difference in the world in a different way. One that's
well, you certainly are. You certainly are. Let's tell people your website again. It's Veronica Monet.
Well,
and
that website is still up, and they're welcome to go there and get all kinds of information, basically, about me. That's a website about me. But if you want to find out what it is that I can do for you, then you
mm-hmm.
should go to sexwithoutshame.com.
Sexwithoutshame.com or
sexwithoutshame.com.
Listen to bbsradio.com, and the name of your show is?
The Shame Free Zone, which you're going to be on next Monday. So your listeners might want to tune in to my show next Monday at 9 p.m. Pacific time, and I'm going to be talking to you about Tantra, and I got a whole bunch of questions for you, Laurie.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on my show.
That's
I appreciate
pleasure.
It. I thank my sponsors, I thank my audience, my listeners, and I thank the station. I just love this show, and I loved having you here, Veronica. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And with that, everybody, namaste. See you next week.